Welcome to Today on Broadway for Tuesday, September 13th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
James, we often talk about how people can hear us on iTunes or Stitcher or on BroadwayRadio.com, but it occurred to me that there's a lot of other ways that people can listen to us that we don't often talk about. So do you want to run through that list since that's kind of your area of expertise?
We've got a lot of new listeners from iHeartRadio, which has started playing us about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
That's fancy.
So we are streaming on iHeartRadio. You can find hundreds of hours of Broadway Radio programming on iHeartRadio. So if you are so inclined to run up iHeartRadio at your office while you're doing your day job or having some fun at home and things like that, or throw it on your mobile app, you can do that. And we are also played all over the world in many public radio outlets. We are also played occasionally on the Armed Forces Radio Network, and we are played where else are we played?
On an airplane.
Oh, yeah. United Airlines In-Flight Entertainment occasionally plays us on their radio channel as well. So there's a lot of different ways to listen to us. And if you hear of some strange place that you've never heard of us before, email us and let us know that you heard us there so that we can figure out how we are reaching everybody.
Cool.
It's very exciting. Who knew?
You did, and that's why I wanted to make sure everybody else out there knew as well.
That is an excellent point. All right, so big news for our dear friend Evan Hansen. He's moving down the block?
He is. Yesterday we got a surprise announcement that the highly acclaimed and anticipated new musical Dear Evan Hansen would be moving from its originally announced Belasco Theater home on 44th Street near 6th Avenue to the Music Box on 45th between 7th and 8th. The show's performance dates will remain unchanged, with previews beginning on November 14th with the official opening on December 4th. It's a bit of a curious move, since both theaters are owned by the Schuberts and are barely two blocks apart, and are separated by only 9 seats in terms of capacity. The orchestra and mezzanine setups for both theaters is fairly similar, and the only major difference in terms of layout comes in the Belasco's balcony, which the Music Box does not have. In an effort not to deter ticket buyers, in an effort not to deter anyone from buying tickets, the show will continue to sell Belasco tickets through Sunday, but eventually everyone will be contacted by telecharge regarding the exact method of their exchange. James, whispers are that Come From Away, which has already been announced for Schubert House, will take the now vacated Belasco, but I don't know that it gives us really an indication as to what the thinking was behind this move. I mean, maybe the Dear Evan Hansen team thought that moving to a theater with no balcony would create a more intimate experience for the audience, because this musical is fairly small and has a small cast. But this whole thing is a little—it's a little hard to get your mind around.
Yeah, I'm looking at this, and I think that it might be a little bit of superstition. People don't like to run musicals east of Broadway. And also something else that occurred to me is that, and this totally is 1,000,000% speculation, is that it is the new theater is closer to Second Stage's offices. So I don't know if that would make a difference to anybody. So
I mean, it's not super far away. I mean, it's like two and a half blocks.
You know, crossing Times Square is a nightmare on matinee days or any other crazy day or things like that. So, you know, it's like, you know, you have to be a true New Yorker to understand going from the east side to the west side is just, you just don't do it.
Fair point.
Well, or west side to the east side, I should say.
Yeah, or vice versa. Yeah, the thing with Come From Away is that people are kind of thinking that that's what's going to slide in there. And I did want to mention here real quick that the production in Washington, D.C. at Ford's Theater has recently opened, and we've gotten some reviews so far, and they're mostly pretty positive. But the one thing that has kind of been a little critical comes from the Washington Post's Peter Marks, and he says, quote, "One wonders whether the story might be better served with slightly less emphasis on the logistics of sheltering the strangers and more on the characters' lives." If you remember, Come From Away has to do with the thousands of air travelers who were grounded on 9/11 and were stuck in a remote airport in Newfoundland, Canada. So maybe there's some work for that show to be done before it gets to Broadway. I can't imagine that it would come in until late in the spring, because it does have the DC production and then one up in Toronto. So it's on a pretty tight schedule unless it cancels the Toronto production, which I don't see happening. So it's got some time before it comes in the spring, but that will leave, you know, one Schubert House vacant for the fall, and maybe they'll fit something else in, like we've seen so many other theater owners do this fall, try to find something short term.
Yeah, that's a possibility as well. I mean, we did propose the Idina Menzel concert series.
to run opposite Kristen Chenoweth, just to have a once and for all box office battle royale.
So we haven't talked about this before, me mentioning it, but what do you think about October Sky, you know, coming in from the West Coast?
Well, that is such a legal mess right now. We've talked about it before with the two different musical versions of this story, one by the man who originally wrote the book, one from the movie company who adapted it for the screen, and there's lawsuits going on. I would imagine that before that can make a run in New York, that would have to get figured out, don't you think?
I think it will have to get figured out, absolutely. But certainly Universal Pictures getting behind the production at the Old Globe and good buzz out of the Old Globe about it. You know, we never know what's going to happen there.
But also, you don't see a lot of limited run musicals from anyone other than not-for-profit subscriber theater, so it'd be weird to see them put
I'm just talking about the spring October show.
In general,
not for a limited run, no,
not putting it in the Belasco for the fall. Gotcha.
Yes, I should have been more clear. I'm sorry about that. All right. So you talked a little bit about Come From Away's DC review, so let's hop on to last week's Broadway grosses.
Coming off of the Labor Day weekend, Broadway was dealt a bit of a gut punch, dropping over 13.25% in sales to just over $20 million for the week. Granted, there were three fewer shows running after the holiday weekend, but a $3 million decline is never good. Hamilton again reigned supreme at $2.15 million for the week. Lion King, still in second, took a bit of a decline, dropping over $154,000 last week to its lowest total for an 8-performance week since mid-March, obviously greatly affected by the fact that kids were back in school. Wicked, Aladdin, and the Book of Mormon all grossed over $1 million for the week, and they were the only other ones, despite each taking bottom line hits, and in the case of Aladdin, a substantial one at nearly $195,000 in the red. The biggest gainer of the week was Beautiful at nearly $153,000, coming off of that bizarre break-even week we talked about 7 days ago. I'm not really sure if that was ever remedied. It still shows up as a zero increase from the previous week, but good for them getting a nice bounce back over the Labor Day week. Fun Home had a $73,000 bump in its final week on Broadway, and despite a $111,000 increase moving from 4 to 7 shows last week, Roundabout's Holiday Inn still looks to be in early trouble, bringing in only $276,244 last week on 7 performances. Interestingly enough, with recent closings, Holiday Inn was the only show not to gross at least $500,000 last week. And this is not completely unusual for Roundabout musicals to start slow, because subscribers generally don't come in those first few weeks. And obviously they will be starting to come as the show moves further along into its run. But you have to wonder, with numbers like this in the really tough fall season, when you still got a couple months till tourists show up for the holidays, you have to wonder if it's even going to make it to the holidays, which this show was obviously built for.
Absolutely. So I've always wanted to coin a term. So let's see if this can catch on.
Okay.
You know, $1 million in the grosses, we can just call that a Wicked. And $2 million in the grosses, we can just call a Hamilton. And so to put this in perspective, the $3 million plus decline in the grosses from last week to this week can be a Hamilton and a Wicked put together. Can you imagine just taking those out of the equation? That's a big drop.
The only flaw in your thinking that I see comes with the fact that we already think of a Hamilton as $10, and if you're not completely clued into what's going on, I have a feeling that people might not understand that you're talking about $2 million as opposed to $10. Because that would really change the concept of the ham for ham lottery if it's a Hamilton ticket for $2 million.
What about if we would just call it a Miranda?
All right, that's fair, although Sex and the City fans might get confused. But, that you know, we can deal with them later.
You know what they call a $20 bill?
I feel like I'm getting set up for a punchline.
No,
so go ahead
you're
and
not.
Give it to me.
A $20 bill is called a New York buck because it's like nothing is worth less than $20, and you can't do anything with less than $20 in New York City. So the Hamilton being $10, it's like half a buck. It's like 50 cent.
It's like what, James?
Like 50 cent.
50 Cent. Okay, are we talking two quarters of the wrapper? Never mind, we're getting way off track here.
We are. All right, what's up in the show and casting news?
Well, tickets for the Broadway revival of Miss Saigon officially went on sale yesterday morning. The production will begin performances at the Broadway Theater on March 1st of next year for a supposed limited run through January 18th of 2017. Although, James, I think you and I are both a little bit suspect as to whether or not the run will end on that date. Directed by Lawrence Connor, the revival originated as the 25th anniversary production in London's West End and starred Americans John Briones as the engineer and Eva Noble Zeta as Kim. If you forgot, a filmed presentation of that 25th anniversary performance and a subsequent reunion will be screened in movie theaters around the country next Thursday, September 22nd. I will definitely be there, as I often am for these theatrical screenings in movie theaters. And as Peter Felish and I have talked about on This Week on Broadway before, those usually don't have huge crowds, but I have a feeling that this one will probably have more people than I'm used to seeing at these things.
Yeah, that should be very exciting. I'm going to have to see if there's a theater near me that I can go and check this out at. Because I think that it'd be really great to see this again and brush up my Saigon before it comes back to the Great White Way.
Yeah, and obviously Lea Salonga and Jonathan Pryce are there for the reunion, much like Cameron McIntosh did with the 25th anniversary of Les Mis, bringing back so many of the past stars. I think he had five or six different Valjeans on stage at once. And so I think that'll be really cool. I'm excited. You know, as listeners know, I don't get it up to New York nearly as much as I would like. So getting to see this before it transfers to New York is really exciting. As we've talked about before, it'll be interesting to see if they do some sort of studies to see if people who saw this were encouraged to buy tickets or if it dissuaded people from actually buying tickets in New York.
All right. Next up, Daniel Sullivan is going to direct Roundabout's If I Forget beginning in February.
Yeah. Yesterday, the Roundabout Theater Company announced that Daniel Sullivan, a Broadway director with many, many credits, would helm the previously announced premiere of Stephen Levinson's new play, If I Forget. RTC also announced that the production would begin on February 2nd at the Laura Pels Theater off Broadway and would run through April 30th. Press notes read, in the final months before 9/11, liberal Jewish studies professor Michael Fisher was reunited with his two sisters to celebrate their father's 75th birthday. Each deeply invested in their own version of family history, the siblings clash over everything from Michael's controversial scholarly work to the mounting pressures of caring for an ailing parent. Roundabout says that casting and further creative team members will be announced soon. Another announcement that came out yesterday was that the national tour of Finding Neverland had found its cast that will hit the road in just 3 weeks, beginning in Buffalo. Kevin Kern, most recently a swing in the Broadway production, will be playing J.M. Barrie. Christine Dwyer, who has been in and out of Wicked playing Elphaba on Broadway in New York for years, will play Sylvia Llewellyn Davis. And Tony nominee Tom Hewitt, who has a Broadway and national tour resume longer than my arm, will play Charles Frome / Captain Hook. Interestingly enough, James, a few years ago, Hewitt spent a year and a half on the road playing Mr. Darling in Captain Hook to Kathy Rigby's Peter Pan. So a slightly different version of the role, but something that he's none too disfamiliar with. As I said before, the national tour begins performances in Buffalo on October 7th. We will have a link to the full cast in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com.
All right, next up, theater continues to shine at the second night of the Creative Arts Emmys.
Yeah, we promised yesterday that if any other theater folks or theater productions won Emmys on Sunday night, that we would bring them to you, and there were quite a few. In the Best Choreography category, Catherine / Kat Burns, who I recently interviewed and will have a piece on a little bit later this fall. She tied for an Emmy for Best Choreography for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. She tied with the Quest crew on America's Best Dance Crew. This one went specifically for the work on I'm So Good at Yoga, a boy band made up of four Joshes, and Settle for Me, which is all really good ones if you aren't familiar with those. And then Paul Tazwell of Hamilton fame won an Emmy for his costume designs of The Wiz Live. And then Grease Live, which we all kind of noted was probably the high point of the recent live musical phenomenon, won a bunch of awards on Sunday night. First, the lighting design and direction won. It also won for Best Special Class Program. The technical direction, camera work, and video control won as well. And then another Hamilton guy getting some TV love, especially this time working with Thomas Kail, who directed Grease Live. David Korins won for the Best Production Design in the Variety Nonfiction Award Special category. So good for Grease Live. They will be up for another one, including Thomas Kail's direction, on this coming Sunday, September 18th. Another one of note that I wanted to throw out in the Best Variety Special category, The Late Late Show's Carpool Karaoke Primetime Special won, and obviously that was hosted and featured Tony winner James Corden. So good for all those folks. Jen and I often talk on Some Like It Pop about what great work is being done by theater folk on screen on TV, but it's also cool to know that the great artists that work in and around New York theater are also being rewarded for their work on screen as well. So congratulations to everybody who not only won, but was nominated as well.
Did you know that there was a huge crime last night?
Here's the joke with the punchline. No, I did not know that. Go ahead, James.
There was a huge crime last night because Cynthia Erivo and Josh Henry led a one night only last 5 years.
Don't remind me, James.
One night only. That's a crime.
One night only. Yeah. I saved this one for last because I didn't want to get angry and throw anything. I didn't want my quasi-Italian temper to get the best of me. But as you mentioned, last night, Cynthia Erivo and Joshua Henry led a concert tribute presentation of the last 5 years. I was doing okay, thinking that I wasn't going to be there. I was getting used to it. I was getting accustomed to that fact. I was coming to terms with it until that damn Jason Robert Brown guy decided that he was going to post a Facebook video of Joshua and Cynthia singing and rehearsing the next 10 minutes in what I assume is JRB and Georgia Stitt's piano room. It upset me. I'm not going to lie. It made me angry. I broke some things. We'll have a link to that. Maybe James, maybe you can play that in the as we go out. But in all seriousness, they're amazing. Like these two are—they're just sitting around, you know, Jason's piano while he's playing, and they are bonkers good. So as I saw Will Swenson post on Twitter earlier in the day, that he said, I really hope this is filmed somehow because he needs that in his life. I can't imagine them doing a cast album of this because there's already three of them out there. They just had the movie, so I don't know that this will be filmed. Although this is a benefit production, so maybe they will, and the proceeds will go to charity. But if there is any way to see this or hear this in its entirety, I am all for it because I go through all three of the cast recordings regularly. And having a fourth, I would have no problem mixing that one into my rotation as well.
You asked me the other day about my favorite musical theater songs.
Yeah.
I think that three or four of them come from this score. I adore this score. I love it.
And you know what's interesting is that, you know, so many of us became so attached to the Norbert and Sherry version that I didn't think that hearing either the Off-Broadway revival or the movie soundtrack, and it's well known my affection for Anna Kendrick, I didn't think that any of those would compare. But what's so interesting is that because those artists are so different from each other, Jeremy Jordan and Anna Kendrick, Adam Cantor and Betsy Wolf, you know, Sherry Renee Scott and Norbert Leo Butz, they're all so different from each other. They really do feel like they're not revivals or movie adaptations. They feel kind of like completely separate works, and I can find something to appreciate in each one. And I think that is just a testament to the great work that Jason Robert Brown did with that score. And that's why it is still a well loved show around the country. I have a friend named Galen Crowley who is doing a production in Nashville right now. She's playing Kathy. She is fantastic. If you're in Nashville, see it. I highly recommend it. I can guarantee you that even though Galen is actually Jewish and she's not a shiksa goddess, she will blow you away. But it's just a great show. And I would be fine if... Here's something, James. You mentioned, I'm way out on a tangent here, but I love this show so much. You mentioned that some of your favorite show tunes are from the show. If I had to pick just one show to see for the rest of my life, I'm not saying for sure this would be it, but it would make my final three or four of shows to consider.
Yeah, I think I'd be sitting right next to you in the theater.
Fair enough.
All right. You're going to miss me when I'm gone, so get us out of here.
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt, and subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thank you so much for checking in with us on your Tuesday, and we'll be back on Wednesday to get that started as well.